Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter
8,
chapter 8, text number 32.
First
kind of. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Chapter entitled Prayers by Queen Kunti. Kachiraho Ajam Jatam Punya Shloka Shakirtaya Yado Priyasyan Vabhaye Malasevya Chandanam Kachiraho Aham Jatam Punya Shloka Shakirtaya Yado Priyasyan Vabhaye Malasevya Chandanam Kachiraho Aham Jatam Punya Shloka Shakirtaya Yeropiyasyan Ambandit Malayasiva Chandanam. Translation. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings, and others say that he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. This is Queen Kunti glorifying Krishna. Purple by Srila Prabhupada. Because the Lord's appearance in this material world is bewildering, there are different opinions about the birth of the unborn. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he takes birth in the material world, although he is the Lord of all creations and he is unborn. So there cannot be any denial of the birth of the unborn, because he himself established the truth. But still there are different opinions as to why he takes his birth. That is also declared in the Bhagavad Gita. He appears by his own internal potency to re-establish the principles of religion, and to protect the pious, and to annihilate the impious. That is the mission of the appearance of the unborn. Still, it is said that the Lord is there to glorify the pious King Yudhisthira. Lord Krishna certainly wanted to establish the kingdom of the Pandavas for the good of all in the world. When there is a pious king ruling over the world, the people are happy. When the ruler is impious, the people are unhappy. In the age of Kali, in most cases the rulers are impious, and therefore the citizens are also continuously unhappy. But in the case of democracy, the impious citizens themselves elect their representative to rule over them, and therefore they cannot blame anyone for their unhappiness. Maharaj Nala was also celebrated as a great pious king, but he had no connection with Lord Krishna. Therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira is meant here to be glorified by Lord Krishna. The Lord had already glorified King Yadu, having taken birth in his family. Although he is known as Yadava, Yaduvira, Yadunandan, etc., he is always independent of such obligation. He is just like the sandalwood that grows in the Malaya hills. Trees can grow anywhere and everywhere. Yet, because the sandalwood trees grow mostly in the area of the Malaya Hills, the name sandalwood and the Malaya Hills are interrelated. Therefore, the conclusion is that the Lord is ever unborn like the sun, and yet he appears as the sun rises on the eastern horizon. As the sun is never the sun of the eastern horizon, so the Lord is no one's son, but he is the father of everything that be. Om Ayanam Tanandasha Gyanasraka Chakshur Nitamri Tasma Sikri Vinaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Vitare Simhati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Nitya Namane Namaste Sarasati Devi Gaurumani Vicharine Nirvishesha Shandavari Pasyate Sadarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashavi Shri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Translation again. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings. Another say that he is born to please King Yadu. One of your dear devotees, you appear in his family. A sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. Can be here saying how different people have different reasons, understandings of why the Lord appeared. Have you gone for another two slogans? We'll describe this, three slogans. Different, it's saying different people have different opinions why you appear here. That you glorify the pious kings. And because the Lord, he also appears as Ramchandra. He appeared as the very pious king, Rajaram. And you appear to glorify Yadu, King Yadu, because he's born in the Yadu dynasty. Just give an example, as the sandalwood trees, where the sandalwood tree in the forest, the whole forest becomes scented. The whole forest becomes fragrant with sandalwood. So therefore, when Krishna appears in a particular dynasty, then the whole dynasty becomes glorious, simply because he takes birth. It is said also that if a living entity perfects his life and becomes a pure devotee, 19 generations, there's different things, some say 17, some say 19. 19 generations backwards and 19 generations to come will get liberation. Simply because that person was born in their family. So that is the potency of the pure devotee. To see the potency of Krishna, his whole dynasty is affected. The potency of a pure devotee spreads. Simply because someone's in contact with that person, even in a blood relationship, even though they've never heard of that person, simply by being born in that family, that means they also have a lot of sukriti to be born in such a position, and that this way they're glorified. We understand the main purpose is Krishna appears is actually to give pleasure to his devotees, because he said, why should I come and kill the demons? He said, I can kill them, by my time factor will kill the demons. It's just a question of waiting. So Krishna doesn't have to come to kill demons. If he wants, he can give him a heart attack. He's a super soul in the heart. If he wants, he can say, okay, heart, stop beating, bus finished. One moment. He doesn't have to come down and exert himself and take up weapons or even he does this, it's very wonderful how he assumes different forms to do that. He assumes a gigantic form of a boar. Because boars are very good at getting you've seen the boars in the, you don't see so many in Bangalore now, but you see the pigs are in the gutter, in the dirty things. But they find they can smell under that. They can taste, even under all that stuff, they find what they want to eat and they put it out. So because the earth had fallen to the bottom of the Garbha ocean, so they assumed the form of a boar, picked it up, went down and found it. And then had a tremendous battle, intergalaxy battle. Hiranyaksha had a form so big, because he was also a yogi. The demons are very, they worship demigods generally and get a lot of power. So he expanded his form into huge. Then Brahma also expands himself to the same. He said their form was so big when they were fighting, the hairs on Brahma's, they were scattering the clouds. And the demigods, they had very nice view. They had good seats. No one else, we wouldn't be able to see it. Right? If the earth was on Brahma's nose, you can imagine how big he is. Right? So it's just like, you know, it's like an ant trying to conceive of, you know, what's going on. But much greater than that. So you wouldn't even be able to see everything. Even if you could. But the devas, they have nice avas so they can float around and... And that was a very wonderful thing. And sometimes the Lord, one time he lost his club, fell down, and everyone's heart drops. but then he picks it up, and everyone becomes enlightened again. And it gives him. So it's a very nice story. So 5,000 years later, we're still relishing these stories. But it's mainly he doesn't have to do that. Krishna doesn't have to do that. He could do it in a moment without exerting himself. But if he did that, then we wouldn't have this pastime. We wouldn't sing Kesavadita, Varaha, Kesavadita, Narahariva, Kesavadita, Karma, Sarupa. We wouldn't have all these nice things to discuss. So that's the real reason why he comes. Just to leave behind these wonderful stories. Because the Lord, his name, fame, activities, they're all transcendental. So simply by hearing about his activities, that's transcendental. Now your focus, now your energy is directed on transcendence. It's purification. You're becoming just like when you can't see electricity. It's there. The wire is not spiritual. The wire is not electric. But it's a good medium for carrying that. So if you touch that, anywhere you touch it, you'll get the benefit of electricity. So it's like that. Spiritual life is like that. Somehow we have to get connected. And Krishna knows that no one has any... We didn't come here to serve Krishna. We come here for the opposite purpose. So it's not a very good place to worship and serve in the Lord. It's a place where you come to forget. It's a place for rebellious people. So that's our mentality. Everyone has the wrong mentality. We want the mentality of the Lord that I'm trying to control and enjoy. So the purpose of creation is to frustrate that desire. But the Lord doesn't just leave us on our own to try to figure everything out. Otherwise you never ever understand what was going on in this world. The highest realization, and then you'd need some help to come to, is that you're different from this material world by your own intelligence and logic. You could understand that you're different by the process of neti-neti, etc. Understanding that that whatever I see and can perceive is different from me. No? There's a difference between the seer and the seen. There's always that distinction. I see. You know, I see. So that's the process of neti-neti. So we just go everything in the whole universe. I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. So we exhaust everything. Then you come to that realization that, you know, I'm not part of this. So then you come into to your own body, because you say my body. So my body implies too. Me and my body. Me and my mind, my intelligence, we say this. My identity. So when you say that, immediately implies too. So if it's my body, then who am I? So if you come to this, then you get stuck. Because, you know, how can you see yourself like that? It's the very source of everything. But you can understand, but it only means that you can understand these things is by the use of intelligence, which we call my intelligence. So that's another separate thing. So where did that come from? That's separate from us. We're using intelligence, but where did it come from? We call it mind, just like we call this my body or my book. But actually, where did it come from? We didn't create these things. It was there, somehow or other. it was there, and we're utilizing that. So by logic and intelligence, you can understand, you can come to this conclusion that I'm not different. I'm anti-material. That realization or that understanding comes by the fact that whatever I'm using is material, gross or subtle. To perceive something with my eye, to perceive something, a form, I'm using my eyes. The eye is just a material combination of muscles and fats, things. I'm using that material thing. And if it's defective, then I can't use it. And even if it's good, if there's no light, I still can't use it. So I'm dependent on the eye is dependent on light. So I'm dependent on so many things to be able to do anything. So this way you feel that I'm completely dependent on this energy, material energy, which we've already analyzed is earth, water, fire and air, mind, intelligence, sahankara. Or if you want to go break it down more into 24 elements. So Prabhupada said in the second canto, describing this, the easy way to understand self-realization from Jiva Goswami. So he said, but the understanding that you're spiritual comes from the fact that you feel dissatisfied with your state of existence. You realize that you're completely dependent on these material things for anything. To eat, speak, breathe, see. You need you're dependent on, which in analysts, they're just material objects, different combinations. At the same time, we feel a little frustration because I have the idea that I want to be free and do whatever I want. It's a natural thing because the soul is that has complete freedom in the spiritual world. There's no restriction, there's no material restriction there. But here I feel I'm being restricted. I want to fly in the sky, I can't do it. I want to do so many things, I can't do it. There's a process, you know. I'm restricted. I want to go to the temple quickly. I can't do it. I want to go immediately. I can't do it. My mind can go quickly, but I can't follow. I have to make arrangements. There's a restriction there. There's a restriction there. Pressure there. I have to get into a car. I have to get into a bus. I have to walk there. You know, there's a restriction. I want to go quickly, but there's so much restriction there. So we understand that actually we're conditioned by these things. And we don't like that. We have to have these things as far as we understand. Without these things, we can't do anything. But at the same time, they're a great restriction for us. We want something more than that. So this feeling of dissatisfaction at the state of affairs that we find ourselves in is an indication that that we're actually spiritual, that we're not material. This is a logical way to understand that by the use of intelligence. That we want actually unrestricted freedom, but we're not experiencing that. But why do we want unrestricted freedom? Because it's natural. Where is that idea coming from? Why don't we just be satisfied with what we got? Like the animals, etc. to a degree. But why aren't we satisfied with, we don't know it, we have never experienced to be unrestricted, completely freedom. We've never experienced that in this lifetime. So, if we haven't heard about it before, so why is that desire there? Because it's a natural desire. Because that's your natural position. That's your natural state of existence. So that's coming through the subconscious. You know, you're feeling some pressure, a little claustrophobic in this material world. And it's not satisfactory. But there's nothing we can do about it. So we conclude that actually we're different from the material world. We're actually spiritual. And at the same time, we're completely conditioned by it. We're completely dependent on these things in all of our activities. We need them. So where would you go from there? How much by your own logic could you understand from there? Except you can go one step further. You can appreciate that there must be someone who's supplying these things, because I didn't create these things. Where does his intelligence come from? Where did his mind come from? I didn't create anything here. I just appeared in this place. So there must be someone who is supplying that intelligence. How can I understand all these things this much? How can I understand? Someone is supplying that intelligence. I'm not supplying it. So therefore you can appreciate there's a supreme, another supreme intelligence which is beyond me. Then you can understand there must be God. But that's as far as you can go. You can't go any more than that. So therefore you have to go, you need help. You have to go to the scripture. The guru. So otherwise it's beyond, now it's beyond, you've gone out of your realm of three, it's beyond your, you know, we've only got three dimensions to move around in. But it's beyond that. The truth is beyond that. The absolute truth. So how do we, therefore then you just have to accept on faith. That's as far as you can do physically. Now any realization that comes, you understand it's going to be given to us. It's a gift. So Krishna consciousness is actually a gift. Realization is actually a gift. Because it's not within our power to do anything else. We can only go so far. So Krishna's given that. He said, if you want, here's the process. The material world works under my direction. But if you do that, if you act like this, like this, like this, you're eating, breathing, making, eating, sleeping, doing all those things, exactly the same as anyone else. But if you do this activity, and this activity, and this activity, you'll understand everything by my grace. In other words, if you follow the path that I'm giving, this is a way out. In other words, God is saying, this is a way out. So, if you follow that on faith, then you can become free. Otherwise, there's no hope. By yourself, no hope. So, what does Krishna recommend first? Huh? What is the best thing? Hearing. Just simply by hearing, you can affect your life. Hearing means also acting. Hearing means also acting. Unless you're perfect already. Hearing, that you get, when you're hearing, then you're getting intelligence. By hearing, you're getting purified. The whole thing is, what you're doing, what you're hearing about. Or the other process, talking about, huh? Shravanam, Kirtan, Vishnu Smaran, or remembering, or engaging in, it's Krishna, it's the Lord, it's God. It's transcendence, the absolute transcendence. So, Krishna's saying, if you do this, Manmanabham Bhakto, we were in the Bhagavad Gita yesterday, always, whatever you do for me, somehow or other, keep in contact. You can't do anything. The purification is not up to you. You're endeavoring. But actually, all you've got to do is to stay in contact. Just like if there's some contamination on the street from the dogs, when the sun comes up, it evaporates that place, evaporates and dries it all up, and in due course of time, the place becomes pure again. How? Simply by the sun's rays. Simply because it's in contact with the sun rays. So if we're hearing about the Son of Krishna, or we're talking about the Son of Krishna, or remembering the Son of Krishna, or we're doing some other activity which is prescribed by Krishna, then you're keeping yourself in the sun rays, or as Prabhupada said, in the fire of Krishna consciousness. So that's what's actually purifying you. When you're chanting Hare Krishna, what's happening? It's Krishna's purifying you. The name is purifying you. By hearing that, then you're becoming purified. You're not doing it. It's not how attentively you chant, how nicely you chant, how many rounds you chant. Not really dependent on that. It's the name that's actually purifying you. It's not your sadhana that's doing it. But that must be there, obviously. Because that's also, Krishna's also saying, that is a degree of surrender. Because if you're doing everything really nicely, that means you're sincere. If you're doing it very, very nicely, that means very carefully, that means you're sincere. That's surrender. And that's what Krishna wants to see, sincerity. So this is the main reason for why the Lord, the unborn Lord, appears here. Appears to be born. He takes his birth. Apparently he takes his birth. But this is the main reason. And when he's here, what does he do? He glorifies his devotees. He makes his devotees glorious. Why? Because what great men do, other people will follow. So if Krishna's glorifying and that these people become exalted, then we're following their footsteps. They'll be our heroes. So then we follow, what do? They follow what the Lord says. So the whole thing is somehow or other to attract us to the proper path of activities. But you can't see the difference between a transcendental activity and a mundane activity. By your eyes, you can't see the difference. Right? Because if you're doing something here, you're doing some work here, you're cleaning the temple, and someone's cleaning the street outside, what's the difference? What's the difference in activity? There's no difference in activity, but there's difference in consciousness. There's difference in reason why you're doing this for Krishna's pleasure. Make the temple nice, the devotees will be pleased, and Krishna will be happy. He's doing it for money. He's doing it for some chapatis. It is, sorry, in the wrong place. So, that's the difference. The only difference is consciousness. So the two activities are the same. One is freeing you from the material nature, and one is binding you to the material nature. It's like the scalpel, the surgeon's scalpel in the hand of a maniac. It's a deadly weapon. It can take lives, but in the hand of the surgeon, it will save lives. Same thing, but it's that application. So this is a science which Krishna is telling. This is the whole thing is to become somehow connected with Krishna. Whatever your motivation is, akama, sama, akama, right? Sabakama, moksha kama, udharati. That whatever you have no desires, you're full of material desires, you want liberation, by all means you should worship Krishna. Because you'll get anyway. Even if you want material happiness, you'll get. Like Dhruva Raj is the prime example. He had a huge material desire. Huge material desire, almost impossible to fulfill. Did I say this the other day? Did I say this the other day? Yeah? Anyway, he got it, but he wasn't going for Krishna, but he actually saw Krishna face to face. He saw Vishnu face to face. Although that wasn't... He wanted to see Vishnu, but he wanted to ask him for some material thing. So that's a trick. Trick of Krishna. Say, yes, I give you whatever you want. Whatever you want. And he does. He's giving you the Vedas, whatever you want. You want to be happy in this life, you want to be as happy as you can be, you want to be rich, you want to be successful. Yeah. You want a beautiful husband, wife. You worship Uma, you worship Shiva, you worship the horizon, you want to be successful in business, you worship... All these things are there. You want to go to Swaga? You want to go to Pitraloka? You take it. What do you want? Take it. It's there in the Vedas. You have to follow nicely. Take it. It's there. You want to come to me? Come. So that is your choice. But he's saying, if you follow this pious path, you'll actually be more happy. And everyone wants happiness. That's a fact. Because happiness is our natural existence. That's why you're looking for happiness, because we're not experiencing our natural state of happiness. So then the whole purpose of religion and the dharma is simply a trick. Simply to get you to be pious. And gradually you'll give up that demonic mentality. Gradually. That demonic mentality will become purified. By? Because if you're religious, if you're worshipping a demigod, it's material. They're material persons, their worship is material, and your goal is material. But before you worship the demigods, you have to chant Om. That's not material. You worship the Shaligram, or you call the Brahman, you call the Vaishnava. He'll do some, you'll get some prasad, you'll hear Vishnu's name, you may hear some Krishna Katha. That's not material. But you're going for something else. But you're getting, this is all Sukriti, purification for you. When that's big enough, then you can... And so that's a whole... It's just a trick to bring you in. You're promising something better. A promise of something better. So those people accept that path, they're called devas. And the others that don't, they're called asuras. But anyway, the mentality is the same with the devas and the asuras. The devas are just a little slightly better because, they do eventually, you know, they become favorable towards the Lord. That's their saving grace. But they're favorable towards the Lord because they know that He can give me anything. He's the bestower of benediction, all benedictions. He's the bestower of immortality. He's the bestower of mukti. He can give you anything. He's such a wonderful person. Why? Because He can give me whatever I want. He can give me all my happiness I need. That's faithful. But what about the Lord's pleasure? It's still my pleasure. So in Baba, there's not much difference between the demons and the devas. Because they're both self-interested. They both want their own betterment. But if you go to the Lord, that desire becomes purified. If you follow the process which the Lord gives, that desire becomes purified eventually. Because eventually you're going to be brought into the right association. Eventually, by following that, you're going to take a better birth. This is the Vanashram system. You've been gradually come to the mode of goodness after long, many, many births. If you follow very nicely, then when you come to the mode of goodness, you're more likely to meet sadhus and saints and holy men, because that's the circle they move in. Right? You're more likely to bump into those people if you're moving in the circles in the mode of goodness. Because their lifestyle is more in the mode of goodness, you see. So that's the reason. Then you get that good fortune. And that's luck. That's the only luck in the world. That's the only chance. Otherwise, everything is karma. It's only luck that you have this. It's called agyana sukriti, right? You get something you're not looking for. You want something else, but you do get that benefit. Unknowingly. Or even knowingly. But in any case, even if it's knowingly, just like we're trying to get Krishna's mercy, to get love of Krishna. We're trying so hard for many, many years. And we've given up, sometimes we've given up the whole materialistic way of life. We haven't got it. So you can't, it's not a thing you can demand. It's a gift. You have to wait. It depends on the Lord's mercy. But we're in a better position to get it when it comes. When Krishna was on Kuruketra, many people saw him, but a lot of people didn't get the benefit. When Mahaprabhu was here, many people saw him. Many people didn't get any benefit. I mean, they obviously got benefit, but they didn't get the full benefit. They thought he was a great person, nice dancer, a sentimental devotee, great saint, or the personality of Godhead according to their... So Krishna's reciprocating according to your bhavas. But the devotees, they feel ecstasy when they see the Lord. Krishna was feeling ecstasy when Krishna was shooting arrows at him. Krishna was feeling ecstasy, and Bhishma was feeling ecstasy also when Krishna was shooting him. The arrows were feeling like love bites. When the arrows hit them, they felt like love bites. Because Bhishma's mood is in chivalry. He says, either Kshatriya, he has that Kshatriya spirit. So then Krishna was reciprocating, and he loves that picture when he's rushing at me, right, to kill me with that. So he picks up the chariot wheel, he's angry, and he's not feeling scared. He's saying, look, Krishna's so beautiful. His blood splattered on his face, it looked like, you know, chandan spots, you know, decorating his face. He's running so fast, his chariot is falling behind him, and he's angry, his eyes like that, and he's angry. What a wonderful picture for Kshatriya. And he's coming to kill me. He said, and he's like this, huh? He's coming to kill me, so ecstatic. His hairs are standing on end. This is a Krishna that he wants to see, you know, he's a fighter. Just like a lion rushing to kill an elephant in his name. So Vishnu was really, really loved that picture. But everyone else wasn't like that. Yeah? When Krishna entered into the arena, Mathura with Balaram, everyone saw him, the others saw him as our man. The Vishnu is one of our clan. the boys, his friends and that, this is our friend Krishna. The Vrishvasis saw. All the women saw him as like Cupid personified walking in. They made it, wow, who's this beautiful person? The yogis saw the Paramatma walking in. It was the same person. Kamsa saw death personified again. He saw the Mustika and Chanaka. Who did they see? They saw Yamaraj or someone. They actually saw these things. All these people were seeing, there was one Krishna walking up the road, and everyone was seeing, the people were perceiving like that, because Krishna was reciprocating according to their bhava. So it's only, even if the Lord comes, if you're not a devotee, you may not even know. But if you're a devotee, then you're going to feel ecstasy. Then you're actually going to feel ecstasy. Because this is what you want, this is what you're waiting for. And Krishna's come to fulfill you. But the person next to you, he may not understand at all what's going on. He may not even know. So that's why we follow a specific process. But the whole idea is to, and that's your endeavor, and that's your surrender. How much you can keep yourself within that process, within that transcendental process, then you're safe from the modes of nature, then you're actually technically liberated, and you're in line for Krishna's mercy when it comes. So you can we put ourselves in that position, Shravanam, Kirtan, Vishnu, Smaranam, Ajanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, like this, all those processes, we keep ourselves in under that protection, and we wait. Nothing else you can do now. Just wait. What can you do? It's not within our grasp. We can't order Krishna. We're servants, right? Servant can't order the master. Servant can't question the master. Servant's a servant. He just waits to be told what to do. And when the master wants to reward him, that's it. So that's our position. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you can embrace me, you can kick me. Whatever you want. You can keep me brokenhearted, you can leave me crying if you like. What can I say? I can't say anything. Let me remain your servant birth after birth. Don't let me forget I'm your servant. Birth after birth. Because it may take that long, according to Krishna's desire. We can't demand, you see. Prabhupada said one lifetime, so we should get some inspiration from that. But in any case, it's not our position to question the Lord. If someone has a present for you, they got it and you can see it. It's your birthday, they got a present in their pocket. You can't say, give me my present. What can you say? You know it's there, you know he's going to give it to you, but you can't say, I want it now, give my present. You can't say it. You have to wait till he gives it to you. So that's our position. So we need patience, we need tolerance, and we need determination to continue. Because it may not happen when we want it to happen. It may not happen as fast as we want it to happen. But we accept everything as the mercy of the Lord. Because it's not happening, it means because I know my heart is still hard. That's why. Because if I had bhakti, Krishna would immediately come. If I had real bhakti, Krishna is attracted by bhakti, he's controlled by bhakti, he would immediately come. So it's evident that I don't have any bhakti, this is my proof. Because I'm such a rascal. Because I'm still so attracted to other things, I'm not willing to actually give them up. So my prayers are not they're not really sincere. I really don't want Krishna that much. That I have to give everything, all these other ideas of happiness up. That much, I'm not willing to surrender. So you get whatever you deserve. Krishna will reciprocate. But if you surrender 100%, he'll give you. He'll immediately come 100%. So we want to develop this line of mentality. That's what we're doing. That's what's given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the acharyas in our line. So that's what this is the essence of Bhagavatam, is saying these things. It says you can give so many reasons. Some say that the unborn is for this, some say that the unborn is for this. She's saying so many slokas, she'll be saying these things. Because so many people have different ideas according to their degree of surrender. The sages, they saw Krishna on the battlefield, somehow or other, they said Krishna was standing in the middle of the battlefield with Arjuna, and his chadar was blowing a little bit, and his hair was moving, and his his garland was moving in the breeze. And they said, what a wonderful picture. They said, what a beautiful picture, the Supreme Lord. They're so beautiful, standing there, slightly breeze, in the middle of the two armies, completely composed. They said, we think the whole battle is performed just for this picture. Just so we can see this. So that is the actual reason why he said, just simply to attract us, he performed his wonderful pastime. Simply to take our mind off other things and fix it, connect it again. And that is our good fortune. And everything will become. Then we are successful while we're doing that, and all complete success will come, spiritual success. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sarvopad ki jai, Gopraman. Any questions? Any comments? Yes.
He said that if there is a devotee who becomes perfect in his sadhana bhakti, then 19 generations are liberated.
No, if a person gets love of God.
No, of course. So, what kind of liberation do they get? Are all those generations, they also go back to God of Vrindavan?
No, not necessarily. No, but they get free from the material world. If they chant Hare Krishna, take Krishna's Charanamrita, take Mahaprasad, they'll get love of Godhead. Sooner or later. It must act. But otherwise it didn't come. That just depends on one's particular bhava. Where you go in the spiritual world, what you want. Eight perfections you can have. Five kinds of liberation. It's all perfect.
The next question is, when the demons get killed by Krishna, they also get liberated.
Yeah.
So, they won't get obviously the highest form of liberation.
Well, some of them did. Putana did. Because she actually offered something to Krishna. She offered some milk. So he took the milk. He rejected the poison. So she came as a mother. He accepted her service as a mother in the spiritual world. She got the position of a mother. Vatsalabha, she got the position of a nurse in Vrindavan. That's unusual. There is exceptions there. That is unlimited mercy. She's a demon, she goes back. We're trying hard, banging our heads, trying to. And we don't go, we're having such a hard time. She comes to kill Krishna, she's immediately back. He's a complete independent Lord. Obviously, she's not an ordinary person. None of these characters in Bhagavatam are ordinary people. You can't take birth. If you take birth when Krishna's appearing, then it means you're very pious, but you've got a lot of stupidity. If you take birth on a universe planet where Krishna's appearing, that means you've done something in your previous birth to get there. And especially those born in Vrindavan, it's meant to be their last birth, the ones born in Vrindavan.
In the case of Kamsa, he got killed by Krishna, and obviously he didn't get the highest form of liberation. So maybe he merged into Kamajyoti or something. So is there a chance for him to go from there to the highest stage?
No, in the Kamajyoti there's no chance to go higher. That's why we don't accept it as mukti, not complete liberation. Because that's the tathasta position. But you can't maintain tathasta position. Not this, not that. It's not Sanatana Dharma, you see. You're created for a purpose. Krishna's already got his jyoti. Another little spark in that unlimited jyoti he doesn't need. He doesn't need you and me up there. So, it's not your position. You're not created for that. You're not created for that purpose. So therefore, because you wanted that, or because there's a reward, then you can stay there for unlimited amounts of time, according to our calculation. Unlimited. And seemingly, be very nicely situated. Satchit. They say it's ananda, but it's actually not ananda. Because if there's ananda, then it must. How can you relate to ananda? If there's no distress, if everything is one there, how can you say it's ananda? If as soon as you say pleasure, it implies misery or suffering. Right? If there was no suffering, no discomfort at all, the word pleasure, happiness, wouldn't be in the dictionary. So it wouldn't have any meaning. So there's not actually an under there. You may be in that position, but you can't say this is an under. Because there's nothing else to relate to. Everything is one. There's no duality there. So how can you say it's ananda? Because if as soon as you say this is ananda, it applies to something that is not ananda. But everything is one there. There's no duality at all. So it's just a state of existence. It's just a sensation, just an experience, which doesn't change. So we don't accept that as actually real mukti, because it's not the soul's sarup. It's not the soul's position to be there. So sooner or later, you may have to come down. When the desire for activity comes, you won't be able to stay there because there's no activity there. Nothing happened there. But you're an active person by creation, the soul, and you have a function. So when that, eventually that desire will come back because it's natural. So when you've stayed there long enough to enjoy and earn what you, Krishna's fulfilling your desire, it may be an eternity for what we're considering, but the whole of the Brahma's lifetime is just like a lightning flash according to from Vishnu's angle of vision.
What you are saying is there is lack of misery in the Brahma jyoti, but there is nothing positive. It's just a neutral state.
It's neutral, it's spiritual. It's transcendental. But how can you say this happiness? It is no distress. How can you say this is happiness? If you say this is happiness, it means you must have experienced something worse. Right? But you can't. There's only one experience here. There's no duality. So even if it is ananda, you won't know it's ananda. It's just a state of existence. You'll only know it's ananda because there'll be a fluctuation. But there's no fluctuation there. So how can you say what it is? State it what it is. But obviously there's no suffering, obviously. Because then there'll also be fluctuation. It'll be going down. So whether there is or whether there's, but we say there's no ananda. Because even if there is, there's nothing to relate it to. So it's just a state of existence, just a state of being. Because you want to commit suicide, you want to commit spiritual suicide, so you're given that. You think life is troublesome, relationships are troublesome, let me go to that place where there's no more troubles. Because the body gives you trouble, and the body means relationship. Bhava means rasa, with something else. Relationship with the heart, relationship with the cold, relationship with other people, relationship with time, it's troublesome. Relationships are troublesome in the material world. They're always changing and not permanent. So therefore you think, then spiritual life must be completely opposite. This is their logic. They're putting mundane logic on the spiritual world. Therefore the spiritual world must be complete opposite. Therefore there must be an absence of all duality. Because it's this duality and desire that causes. So there must be an absence of all those things. So it must be a complete void. So that's their conclusion by a materialistic calculation. So a place like that does exist, but that's a very low grade realization, spiritual realization. That's just the background, that's just the Brahma jyoti, that's everywhere, pervading throughout the whole of space, time, or whatever, the spiritual and material worlds. That's the whole, just like the sky. Within the sky there's wind. You can't say the sky is hot, the sky is cold, the sky is windy, no. Within the sky, everything is going on. But the sky is not affected. So they don't know, but within that sky there's also planets and activities. But that's what they don't want that, you see. Because they fear that if we go there, then there's going to be more duality. There can be more relationships, those relationships will break and we'll be suffering. We won't get what we want. So that fear, then it must be like this, it must be completely opposite. But that's just a material calculation. So I'm saying you have to hear. You can't understand by your own logic, you have to hear of the absolute truth.
So, maybe this Mayavadi is practicing this philosophy. Will there be mode of goodness?
Mode of goodness, they can come to Sudhasattva also. They can reach this Brahman realization, Brahma Buddha. It's transcendental realization. They get that. If they're fortunate. You see, they don't maintain it. In this body, they don't maintain it. There may be some yogis, but the people you see here, these sadhus here, the gurus here, they don't do it. They come down and they start missions and they open hospitals and they do charity work. Why is that? If they attain Brahma-bhuta, Krishna says, attaining this state, Brahma-bhuta prasanatma, you'll know no other happiness, higher happiness. So why don't they just stay in that position, if they've actually realized it? Why do they come down and do charity work? Mundane charity work. Hospitals, things like that, help the poor. Why is that? Because they're getting something else from there. Otherwise they wouldn't do it. They're getting a higher taste. They're getting a higher taste actually doing this mundane welfare work than that Brahman realization. So it means they're not completely Brahman realized. Or even if they are, what is the reason? We can't understand. That's the highest thing. It's beyond the material. Why have they come down and doing some material activity? For the benefit of the people. There's no material benefit for anyone here. You can't benefit anyone materially. All you're doing is prolonging their stay in the material world. That's all. You're making their stay in the prison a bit more comfortable in the prison, that's all. But what's the actual benefit? So it's not spiritual. So why have they come from that spiritual platform and doing that? Well, they'll say service man is service to God. Why? The question is, why do they come down again? If their goal is Brahman, if the world is false, Jagat Mitra, Brahma Sati Jagat Mitra, that's what they say. The whole world is false. Why are they coming down in this false place? Once they've experienced the truth, the Brahman, why are they coming back into the false and acting in the false world again? Doesn't make sense. It means that they're getting some better rasa there. Obviously. Why would you do it? Why are you going back into Maya? Why are you going back into illusion? If you've understood that. It means they're more attracted to that actually. They're getting more rasa there than the Brahman. There's no rasa in the Brahman actually.
Prabhu, you said that when we can self-examine that we have a bhakti or not by getting attraction. See, we get attracted to so many material things, so we stand where we have our bhakti, level of bhakti. So, we don't have bhakti, you said. If you get a real bhakti, we will not get attracted. That's the thing, kind of thing, material. Number one, how do we get a real bhakti? Is it Krishna's mercy or Vaishnava's mercy?
Ultimately? Ultimately, everything is Krishna's mercy, but Krishna's Kripa Shakti follows His pure devotee. Krishna's Kripa Shakti follows His pure devotee. Ultimately, Krishna's doing everything. It's going to come from Krishna. He sanctions everything. Not a blade of grass can move without His consent. But Krishna gives it to His devotee. Generally, doesn't give it directly. That's what we see. So, it's by the devotee, the bhakti shakti comes through. When that devotee is pleased, it says that the bhakti is coming from the spiritual world. It's a haladini shakti mixed with the sandini. When there is by your activity, then that's the haladini and touches you. That's what actually happens. But without the pleasing that devotee, without his favorable attitude, you won't get it. Because Krishna acts through his devotee. So Krishna's actually doing it, whether it's from there or in the heart, he's actually doing it, but this is your key. The pleasure of the devotee is the key. The pleasure of his pure devotee. Because Krishna's, the pure devotee, one is completely surrendered to Krishna, then Krishna surrenders to him. So that pure bhakti can control Krishna. So if the pure devotee blesses us, he sees this devotee in a very nice attitude, Krishna, you please bless him. Krishna will bless you. That's what we want. That's our line. So ultimately, I mean, for all intents and purposes, we need the mercy of the devotees. Because that's where it comes through.
Then the sadhana bhakti and this one should go in tandem. We should have a mercy of Vaishnavas and we should also do sadhana bhakti.
Yeah.
Chanting.
Yeah.
Should go together.
That is their mercy. There's the beginning of their mercy. They're saying, chant Hare Krishna. Remember Krishna. Talk about Krishna. They're giving this, right? Shraddha.
There's only after getting the mercy or before?
That is the mercy. That is the mercy. They put in, then they engage you in devotional service. They engage you in spiritual activity. That's what they do. From faith comes. What is the next one?
Sadhu
Sangha. So as soon as you got a little faith, then you want to go with the associate with the sadhus. Then what will the sadhu give you?
Bhajan
Kriya. He said he's a chant. Immediately then. So that's he's giving you the mercy immediately. He's set you on the path. He's put you in he's given you the transcendental process. So as soon as you do that, you're connected with Krishna. So that's Krishna's mercy. Yeah, he's doing it. Now you've got to qualify. Then it goes up. But when Krishna's actually directly interested, that's on the stage of Bhava. But you've got to get through Anatha Nivriti first to reach that. Shakti, Ruchi, all these things. You've got to come to the Brahma Bhuta platform. You've got to come to the platform of self-realization before the Bhava is full. And then you can actually perform pure devotional service. Then Krishna's interested. Otherwise, not much interested. He's not much interested. Because it's not really bhakti up until that point. You're doing it for yourself. You're following the process, but your happiness is the goal, not Krishna's pleasure or the devotee's pleasure. A little bit, but mainly I want something from it. I can unload my troubles or get some happiness from it. That's the actual motivation, just like Dhruva. So that desire will become purified. So that's anatta nivritti. You're purifying your habits and you're purifying your desires. When those are gone, then you get a taste. Why do you get a taste? Because it's natural. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, it's already in the heart. Now it's just covered by these anathas. If these anathas go, then you'll come alive. You'll get some taste, is there? You'll come to real life. Realization. Everything's already there, you just got to clean it off. Chaitadapana Marjanam. We clean in the heart. Then automatically everything is going to be revealed. But who gave us this process? Devotee. All the mercy is coming through the devotee. And when he's pleased, we get more mercy. So the whole thing is with das, 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 and das. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. So Krishna Shakti comes through his devotee. Is revealed to his devotee, whether he does it directly or not. But we need that mercy of the devotee. Whether the devotee is giving it or Krishna's giving it through the devotee or through directly, it's that devotee has to be there.
One devotee was telling me, he's not even Krishna. The Vaishnavas must see. They should tell Krishna that let him have a bhakti.
Yeah.
Let him get some bhakti.
Yeah. Thank you.
That unless they bless the Vaishnavas blessed, he will not get bhakti.
So Krishna's giving.
Actually, he was telling me even the person is not qualified to get the bhakti, he can ask Krishna, please let him have bhakti.
Yeah.
All the details,
yeah.
He will not get.
Yeah.
That's what he
said. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But it's Krishna that he's saying, please give him bhakti. Krishna's given the bhakti. Yeah. Ultimately, Krishna's given it. But you won't get it without the devotee.
But there's another devotee was telling that the previous. You should have your own desire to get the bhakti. And second thing, you should also have previous birth, some. You should have some shukriti.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should have done some seva.
Yeah, it must be there. Generally, it must be there. There's also without that, but generally it should be there. But you must have that shukriti, otherwise you won't be here.
So then you meet a Vaishnava, I think. Then you will get that something.
Yeah, you know, you got shukriti from previous births. You can't come to this state, what you're doing now. Of accepting the Lord with faith, accepting His process of devotional service, if you didn't have it already, a lot of security, you wouldn't come to this state. How many people in Bangalore are doing what you're doing? Are actually accepting the Lord, accepting a guru, and chanting the holy names of God and trying to follow these things? How many people in Bangalore are doing that? That means you got security from previous birth, you already got security. Unless you get very special, like Prabhupada said to us, I've created your security. How can you have security being born in the West? Well, maybe you have. If you were a very pious Indian in your life, he said, Prabhupada said, I had a dream of, what was it? John Lennon. John Lennon was a very rich musician, famous musician, so he's fabulously rich and famous. He said, I had a dream in his past life, he's a very pious Hindu musician. But obviously he was to be very pious, and he wanted fame, he wanted success, he got money, he got it. But he didn't get Krishna. He got what he wanted. It didn't last because he used it all at once too much, and then boom, someone shot him. He can't use it all up too quick. Started to enjoy like a madman.
If a person is a devotee, then he is experiencing within his heart some bliss, but maybe if another person is not a devotee, maybe he doesn't know what is happening in another person. But if a pure devotee is there and if he is chanting the holy names, and if a devotee is also there, and if a neophyte devotee is there and he is hearing from him, and if a pure devotee is enjoying the transcendental bliss, then how does it affect on the neophyte devotee also immediately? That even as he also experienced some kind of...
No, not necessarily. Maybe. It happens. People feel their bliss.
Because
you've seen in the kirtan, you may have seen, I don't know. If you really study kirtan, if you go to Mayapur sometimes, or you go on the Navadvip Prikram, some very wonderful ecstatic kirtan sometimes. But I was watching one devotee, it's a very ecstatic kirtan at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house. And I was watching one devotee, and he was in complete ecstasy. And he was shaking, and tears were coming to him, and he was trying to stop them because he was chanting right there. And he was just trying to stop the tears coming and trying to, you know, get this kind of thing away. I was watching it, but the others weren't like that. I was feeling a little bit because I was seeing his ecstasy, then it evoked it in me. But I see everyone else wasn't like that. But he was going like, yeah, he was trying to stop it. And I spoke to him. I said, "So you got some mercy today?" I haven't felt like that for a long time. But everyone else didn't feel that. But it was available for everyone. His condition was right. He was receptive. His antenna was right. Tuned in. He got it. Otherwise, it was available for everyone. I got a little bit just by seeing him. One time it was Vyas Puja. Then all the, not Prabhupada's, so it was another guru, and then all the disciples were waiting for the guru to come, and everyone was had butterflies, and they, and I was just standing outside on the temple looking out, and my Mataji was walking down the path towards the temple, and she was walking down, and she burst into tears. She was anticipating her guru was coming, and then she just burst in, just tears coming out of her eyes, and she. Seeing that, I became ecstatic. Then I remember Prabhupada, my experience with Prabhupada, and I also became ecstatic. So like that. But even if a person's unqualified, he can get ecstatic symptoms sometimes. So it's this bhakti is actually causeless. According to we say that what we're talking about is that, but actually bhakti is causeless.
Bhakti?
Causeless. There's no cause for bhakti. There's no cause.
But some people, when they're expressing these kind of symptoms, they see sentimental. Is it correct? Emotional or sentimental?
Of course it's emotional and sentimental, but it's spiritual sentiment, it's spiritual emotion.
So we cannot put it down, no? We cannot.
If it's real. Well, if you experience that, you didn't get that kind of happiness anyway in the material world. You didn't get that experience in the material world. Huh? Even when your son was born. Even when your daughter was married, or whatever, on your honeymoon, you never got that. You never got that experience. that's what's keeping you going. If you don't get that little taste now and again, if you don't feel that ecstasy, then now what are you going to put your faith in? How can you understand that the spiritual world is real as a reality, has some substance? So Krishna gives you an experience, a little bit of experience, even though we're not qualified. Because that should only come on the stage above it, actually. And that comes after self-realization. Brahma Buddha. But if he doesn't give it, then we'll give up. But just that little bit, just those few moments now and again, that is enough to keep you going. That's enough to give you that conviction that there's something tangible here. And that taste, and I want more also. because that's what you're actually looking for. That's your natural state of existence.
Mataji.
Sir.
You are
Well, it's not that you're going to be always enthusiastic. Every day is different. You can't remain enthusiastic all the time. And you'll be up and down different days for no reason. You'll be everything will go nicely one day, it'll be difficult. Every day is completely different. Well, you're always doing service 24 hours a day. But I'm saying, how can you be enthusiastic 24 hours a day? No, we start with the moods are coming and going, different things. It's not that everyone's always enthusiastic 24 hours a day. Unless they're really endeavouring to be enthusiastic. But that takes a lot of willpower and determination. And sometimes you're wiped out, you're sick, you have to be enthusiastic. It's not the same. Now you'd be satisfied. You're the servant. You're just doing the servant. You're the servant's job of assisting the Lord. But you understand this is making Guru happy. This is making Krishna happy. That's my pleasure. Whether I'm happiness or I'm suffering, this is what we Radharani is saying yesterday. Krishna's happiness is a cause of my distress. If my distress, Krishna teasing me like this, making me cry and leaving me broken hearted. If he's happy doing that, if that brings him pleasure. If my distress is the cause of his pleasure, then it may always remain in distress. That's servant. That's love. That's love. You can think like that. That's also healthy. I'm such a rascal. I can't do nice service. Krishna knows I'm useless. Guru knows I'm useless. But still, I'm just going to carry on doing it. Because what else can you do? Stop service, then you're in Maya. That's your choice. You got the choice to continue or you're in Maya. No other choice. So, whether you're happy or in distress, Krishna Mahaprabhu says, you can embrace me, you can kick me, but birth after birth, let me remain your servant. That's the only benediction we're asking. That's pure devotion. But unless you have pure devotion, how can you actually say that from the heart if you're not pure devotee? How can you say that? Difficult. So it's practice. You associate with those who are enthusiastic, you become enthusiastic. But by enthusiasm should come. And it's very essential also, if you want to advance, it's very essential, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm and humility, very essential. And because it means it's sincerity. But it's a feeling, isn't it? Enthusiasm is a feeling. Some people can do it for you by their association, you may not feel very enthused, but if you walk into the environment where it's, nice things happening, then you immediately become enlivened. But for yourself, the mood's always changing. So if you take your association, those who are enthusiastic, you can become more enthused. But you don't expect to be enthusiastic all day when you're doing your service. It's because your moods are going to come and go. But you understand in Krishna seeing, you understand that, Krishna's saying? You're doing service, that's what he's saying. But if you want your happiness, then you can go to Vaikuntha. They're perfectly happy. That's easy. You'll easily get to Vaikuntha by chanting Hare Krishna. And everyone's perfectly happy. Or those other different times of liberation. Sarup, Salokya, Smithya, you can have those. Fantastic. You'll be happy. But you don't get Vrindavan. You don't get Raja Krishna, you don't get Chaitanya. That's something else. That the qualification there to enter Vrindavan is that they love Krishna more than their own lives. This is wonderful. So I'm just thinking about my pleasure, why I'm enthusiastic, oh me. Right? Why me, all this, all that, all that. We're worried about ourselves, you're already liberated, you shouldn't worry about yourself. You just do the service to your guru and wait to see what happens at the end of life. But that is a haiti key. Huh? Without motivation, without interruption, that's how the devotional service should be performed. And that's pure devotional service. But that's not an easy thing. Not an easy thing to do without any expectation for oneself. So we've got to get through this period, past this period. And that's very, very rarely achieved, even amongst the devotees. We're hearing these are daily conversations. We're hearing these every day, so I'll come and talk about these pure devotees. But it's such an exalted position. It's such an exalted position to come to. But it seems quite common to us, because it's all we talk about. You know, we're talking about the acharyas, the goswamis, and the friends and associates of Krishna. But that's such an exalted position. He says, pure devotional service, one of the characteristics is very rarely achieved. It's very rarely achieved. At least you'll be satisfied that you're serving the servant of the servant of the servant of those people. Be nice to go there, be nice to be like them, but... I get out on the street and see some sight and find and knock me off. I'm saying, oh, so nice. Sounds so nice, looks so nice, smells so nice. The Baba is still there, material Baba is still there, so... How can we say it's, you know, it's unmotivated? Should be thankful for small mercies, they say. You're on the road to back to Godhead. And even the royal road, there's danger, so somehow or other, just stay on. Regardless of what happens. And you're going to have a lot of problems, don't worry. There's going to be a lot of obstacles. Maya's very powerful. Kali said. Okay? No, it's not. No. You get a new visa, you stick them back together with this wood glue. Just put them back together. I think you're chanting too much. Right. We don't fast 2 days in a row. See, normally you fast for Ekadasi. And you fast on the appearance of Vishnu Tattva. But we don't fast 2 days in a row. So we'll fast for Ekadasi and Vamandev on Ekadasi day.
No. Fasting till noon means that's the fasting. Anyway, you're fasting on Ekadasi. Fasting till noon means what?
You're fasting for Ekadasi and Vamana's appearance.
Anyway, we are fasting on Ekadasi.
Yeah. But you're
full day we are fasting.
Yeah, but the consciousness is now you're doing for both. You're doing for both.
Well, I understood the fasting till noon as per the calendar means you really should fast, not even water or something.
Well, it doesn't say that. But you can fast in the morning for Ekadasi and fast in the afternoon for Vamana, then you'll be safe. As you like.
I think after 12 really fast.
After 12 you're fast.
Take Ekadasi prasad.
Yeah. And then you... Why? Yeah,
if
you
want.
You can do that. Otherwise you can fast completely. But at least that. You should try to fast through the morning. Without taking food. To midday. Because we don't fast 2 days in a row. it may show us there. Our thing is, we're not dependent on these rules and regulations. Our thing is to develop bhakti. So if you don't fast, if you fast for 2 days, it may be a little too much. You won't be able to function properly. And Prabhupada said the incarnations of Krishna are coming like waves of the ocean. Otherwise, he says you have to fast every day if you accept this. Every day is a summer appearance. Some acharya, some, right? Every day, practically. So just some, we choose. The acharyas have chosen, they've chosen some. So we do what the acharya says, then we show, otherwise we don't know what to do. That's why you have the acharya. So he said like that, you fast half day. But the consciousness is, you're fasting for Vamadeva also. So you can remember Vamadeva on the Kadasi. Prabhupada said on Vaman Dvadasi, you should take one child and dress him up as Vamandev. Give one child, dress him as Vamandev. Okay. No, one boy. And worship him. You can offer him. You can worship that. Krishna says, anyone who dresses as me, just takes my dress, a child, when a child dresses as Krishna, you should understand I'm personally present there. In Mayapur we do that every year. We get the little boy, different boy every year, we give him a deer skin and a kamandalu and a stick. He goes on the altar and then we open the curtains at noontime, his appearance. Then we bring him down and put him on a seat and wash his feet, offer him arati. Then offer him the Mahaprasad, the Lord's Mahaprasad. And he eats that. And then people come up and offer Pushpanjali and he gives them the Mahaprasad. You can do it, yeah. Very nice for you. Everyone comes to, all the parents come to the temple. You can do it here. Prabhupada said you should do that. In Bhagavatam, he even mentions that.
It's only for Vamana's appearance?
Yeah, he only mentions it for Vamana's appearance. But you can do it for anyone. For specific, he mentions that now, for Vamana. Because he's a dwarf, you see, so little boys are really cute.
They can
move
other
resources. Yeah. Yeah, you can expand as much unlimitedly. That's our thing. You gotta attract people, engage people. In Chaupati they do. You read that newsletter, congregational newsletter they have? They have a children's day. The children manage everything. The adults don't interfere at all. They tell the adults what to do on that day. He said on that day, the biggest day, hundreds of people come. All the parents come, all the relatives come. They write the dramas, they act the dramas, they play the music. They tell the parents, you know, where to do it. You know. They organize everything. And they're in ecstasy doing it. They got some responsibility. They do a part. And the congregation ecstasy of the parents. And this way they're checking so many other children. Their friends, they come and see. So it's a big preaching program. They just let the children do the whole thing. It's just finance. I better follow this calendar. Then you're not wrong. The guru, if the acharya sets something, maybe get into trouble here. At least you're following the authority. See, there are different calendars, even amongst the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. We've got Devananda Math and we've got the Jogpit. and sometimes their calendars disagree slightly. Generally they don't, but sometimes, but definitely ours will agree, disagree a lot of times, because ours is on a computerized one. So after hundreds of years, the things should be adjusted, because there's, you know, fractions of, there's seconds each year, which have to be taken into consideration. But these computers can do that. So after hundreds of years, you know, there may be some, you know, some minutes or even some hours difference in some cases. So they, because we were getting into trouble when we started this calendar. Where are you going? You're making your own calendars now? You're making your own panchikas? I never criticized in this going, who are they? Yeah? So when we spoke to like some people in here on this side, and they said, what do you do when it says, when your calendar says it's Purnima, and you look up, and it's not Purnima? They said, then we follow the Purnima, what's up in the sky. They said, but, you know, the calendar, you know, with the modern computers, they can really pinpoint more exactly. Of course, they're infallible, but, you know, they can do things which would take you years by your normal calculation. So they said, but then why don't you change? They said, because it's given by Acharya, Ramanuja. So they won't change. So they're safe if they're following the thing. But this may be also more precise. But if the computer's wrong, then you're wrong. If they're wrong, they're right. If you follow the Acharya, you're right. And actually the Prabhupada told us to follow the Devananda Gaudiya Panchika. He said, follow what they do. Of course, we didn't have computers then. We didn't have astrologers then in ISKCON. So if we follow them, we're right, even if they're wrong. So there may be some differences. So then if the Ekadasi tithis are different, then is it sinful or not to eat those grains? Very often now, Ekadasi days are different from the public ones. Very often. So who's eating sin? He says, if you eat grains, which is on Ekadasi, you're eating sin. So who's eating sin? So one of them must be eating sin, right? Who's right? Who's wrong? So we don't worry too much about this. Krishna says, Savadama, Vidyadama, Vikamsa, Hamsam, Havipat, Vibhu. So you turn into Krishna. If we're Nitya Seva, you don't really have to worry about those things. If you always remember Krishna Seva, Krishna. Otherwise, you're going to break your head and all this thing. But my feeling is, it's only my feeling, anyway, it shouldn't be my feeling. But that, therefore you have the Acharya, and you follow him. And then you're right. Even if you're wrong, you're right, because you're following the Acharya. And it's more important to follow the Acharya than to follow some other calculation. It's more important to do that than follow the rules and regulations, to follow the Acharya. Just like two Acharyas disagree, your guru and my guru disagree, so who's right? Who do you think is right? Who do you think is right? Yeah, your guru is right. So if your guru is right, my guru is wrong. Right? So your guru may give you some instruction and my guru may give you some instruction, and they may be contradictory. But no, you follow what your guru says, I follow what my guru says. Not that we come together and fight, but who's guru is right and wrong. So when there's a dispute amongst peers, I think, who's it? Roshan Das. He said, when there's a dispute amongst your peers, amongst your superiors, they're your guru, it's your guru Vaga anyway. Right? Your guru's god brother, he's your guru Vaga. You have to give him as much respect as your guru. So then, when that's going on, you see this is up there. I'm here and that's up there. I'm not in that realm. I can't understand what's going on that level. I'm on this level. So therefore, I know what my guru says, I'll do that. Otherwise it's apparat. Because if he says one thing and the other one says another, you say, my guru is right, he must be wrong. as apparent. So you say, this is above my level, I know what my guru told me, I'll do that. And they're both right. Prabhupada's also done that. He's given different people different instructions on different times and circumstances, and the mentality also of the person. The guru may be speaking to one person. It may be right for him. No, that you shouldn't read 10th canto. You shouldn't read Krishna's dealing with the devotees. But then someone says, oh, what is guru said you shouldn't read 10th canto Gopis? And someone says, if a guru says that, then he's not a guru, he's a guru. But in that disciple, he says, whenever I feel this, whenever I read this, I get so many lusty desires. Then he says, don't read that part. Don't read Krishna's intimate dealings with the gopis. If it's arousing your lusty, then don't read it. Is it wrong? No, he's right. Don't read it. You read the other 9 cantos, get a bit purified, then you can appreciate the transcendental nature of these. But if you take it out of context, someone else is, then his guru says you shouldn't read the 10th canto. You're distributing 10th canto on the street to the karmis. before he may give specific instruction for somebody. Generally, we set Prabhupada's books as general instructions. We don't accept Prabhupada's letters, conversations, as final as we do the books. Because he's preaching at different times and circumstances. And he says different things at different times. He does say contradictory things sometimes, according to the time, circumstance, and the mood. And also it depends on the tone of the voice. How you say something, it can come out as a joke or it becomes serious. But only if you hear that, you'll understand. If you see it in written form, you'll see it as it is. So therefore we accept the books of Prabhupada. He's writing for the conditioned souls for the next 10,000 years. And he said, I'm meditating on every word I write. He said, you don't know how difficult it is to write these books. He sits down and he said, sometimes I'm thinking of days, what word to put there. So the books we can trust. This is what Prabhupada actually wanted. Another time he's reading Krishna book, and one disciple said, Prabhupada, it's so nice to see you reading your own books. He said, they're not my books. He said, I didn't write this. He said, Krishna directly dictated me when I wrote this book. You have to pray to Krishna that I don't want to do these things, but because of circumstance, because of social pressure, I'm forced to do these things. Krishna, you understand my heart. I don't want to make